In the book of Exodus, the 34th chapter from the 29th verse. And at this point we conclude our studies in the book of Exodus. There are still a few chapters to go on to the 40th chapter, but in fact much of the material there has already been covered in the construction of the tabernacle and so on. And so we finish our studies this morning at chapter 34 and verse 29, the famous story of Moses' face shining on the mountain. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tables of the testimony, with the Ten Commandments on them in his hand, as he came down from the mountain, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone, because he had been talking with God. And when Aaron and all the people of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses talked with them. And afterward all the people of Israel came near, and he gave them in commandment all that the Lord had spoken with him in Mount Sinai. And when Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil on his face. But whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he took the veil off until he came out. And when he came out and told the people of Israel what was commanded, the people of Israel saw the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face shone. And Moses would put the veil upon his face again until he went in to speak with God. Amen. And the Lord will bless the reading of his word. To his name be the honor and the praise. These closing verses in Exodus chapter 34 are of immense importance to the Christian. They are, in fact, picked up by the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians, and they're used by him to illustrate the importance of right character formation. And this is the story. Moses had gone up the mountain, and for some time he lived up the mountain in the intimate, nearer presence of God. And during that period, Moses' character and personality were changed, so much so that when he came down the mountain, his face was glowing. He was radiating the character of God himself. If you like, this was the transfiguration of Moses, just as Jesus was transfigured on the top of Mount Tabor. But the longer Moses stayed away from God, down the mountain in the valley, the more the glow faded. And God told him to put a veil over his face so that the people could not see the glow. The glory of character fading on the face of Moses. And so I want to speak this morning about two kinds of character. Let me call them cosmetic character and Christian character. Now, as we'll see, these two kinds of character, cosmetic character and Christian character, are obviously related to each other, and yet they can be very far apart. Let's think first of all about cosmetic character. And by that I mean character that is brought about from the outside. Molding people and shaping lives from the outside, working inwards. And I don't use the word cosmetic in a slighting or a derogatory way, as we sometimes do. If an older lady uses far too much makeup to make herself ridiculously young, we say, here comes the mutton dressed as lamb with the aid of many cosmetics. And we smile in a slightly derogatory way. I'm not despising character that is formed by cosmetic means, from the outside working inwards, because in fact this is something we are all engaged in all of the time. Take that great phrase from the service of infant baptism, when parents promise, by precept and example, to teach the child the ways of Christ. Precept and example, working from the outside and working inwards to mold and shape the life of a child. That is something that all parents and all ministers and all Christian teachers are engaged in all of the time. And it is something that is commended in the Bible as being utterly essential if the young are to be properly brought up into a useful Christian mature manhood and womanhood. Children don't just happen to grow up properly. Children do not naturally and automatically grow up to become good and honest and true and worthy, useful adults. Their lives need to be molded and shaped from the outside, working in. As King Solomon says, bring up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Or, as the better translation has it, bring up a child according to his way, making allowances for the differences that you find in children in the same family, because all children are not the same, even though they live under one roof. Bring up a child according to his way, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Character forming, cosmetically. Some children need more love than others. Some children need more scalpings than others. Some children are more independent than others. You never met the child who will shrug you off if you try to love him. And some children love fun more than others. But we are to bring up a child according to his way. And all of that is part of the cosmetic process of character formation. I was absolutely appalled a few years ago to hear a mother saying that she didn't believe in telling her children to do anything from a moral or ethical point of view. Her mind was that the children should be allowed to decide for themselves. That was the great phrase that kept cropping up in the conversation. Children should be allowed to decide for themselves. They were to be left alone to make up their own minds. Well, if anything in this world is a recipe for chaos, that is it. And in fact, all her children have grown up to be absolutely godless, decent pagans. and some of them not so decent. Here is how the Old Testament speaks of character formation by precept. Listen to these words from the 78th Psalm. Give ear, O my people, to my teaching. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. We will not hide them from their children, but tell it to the coming generation. The glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders which he has wrought. God established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know them, the children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but remember his commandments. Generation to generation to generation, by precept, from the outside, working inwards, forming character. And that is a ceaseless process that goes on in families and in churches and in Christian fellowships and in Sunday schools and in Bible classes, as the prophet Isaiah said, precept upon precept, line upon line, the cosmetic process of character formation. Precept and example. There is the question of example. I have a theory, and I dare say it sounds a little old-fashioned in these liberal days, that people who are in positions of authority ought to live exemplary lives. This was a point raised during the famous Profumo affair a few years ago. You may recall that Profumo, who was the Minister of War at the time, was consorting with a lady of ill repute in London. Unknown to him, a senior member of the Russian embassy staff was also consorting with the lady, and the possibilities for corruption and for espionage were formidable, and so Profumo fell from power, and there was a great scandal at the time, and many of the more liberal, broad-minded newspapers argued that Profumo was entitled to live his own private life, and that his private morals were irrelevant. And they instanced cases of the infamous adulterers and philanderers of previous years. The Duke of Wellington, Lord Nelson, even Gladstone, Palmerston, Lord Melbourne, Edward the Seventh, and so on. And the papers asked, what have a man's private morals got to do with his public life? Well, the answer to that is another question. What about the power of example to shape character in others? It is quite indisputable that people tend to adopt the moral standards of the famous and the well-known at the top. We copy them and we adopt their clothes, their lifestyles. Witness the plague of Diana hats Witness chic punk. Witness baggy eastern trousers and kinky boots. More seriously, witness sleeping around. If the rich and famous can do it, why can't the ordinary? Witness casual relationships. Witness easy divorce. If the rich and famous can do it, why can't the ordinary? My old-fashioned theory is that authoritarian figures have been set there by God to set exemplary standards for society. Parents are authority figures. Members of the royal family are authority figures. Members of parliament, judges, school teachers, members of the police force, ministers of the gospel, and elders of the church, they are all authority figures put there by God, and they ought to be men and women worthy of being copied. We ought to be able to look up to. Parents, members of the royal family, members of parliament, judges, teachers, policemen, policewomen, ministers, and elders. Because if their standards are low, the standards of society will fall. If there is corruption at the top, there will be corruption in society. Where you get rotten police and rotten judges and rotten lawyers, you will get a rotten society. If ministers of the gospel are corrupt, the elders will be corrupt, and the people will be corrupt. And if the ministers are ignorant, the elders will be ignorant, and the people will be ignorant. And if you have a poor quality of spiritual leadership at the top, you will have a poor quality of spiritual leadership amongst those who are led. Think of how the entire moral standards of the common people of England were transformed and raised during the Cromwellian period, when Puritan theology was preached in the churches and practiced in public life. Think of how the same thing happened in Scotland during the covenanting period, sometimes called the Second Reformation, when drunkenness and immorality and excess were set down, and the standards of the most ordinary people were lifted up by the power of example, precept and example, the work of cosmetic character building from the outside working in. As the old verse puts it, sow a thought, reap an act, sow an act, reap a habit, sow a habit, reap a character, sow a character, reap a destiny. But, and it is an immense but, the trouble is that cosmetic character tends to fade away. That's what happened to Moses on the mountain. He learned by precept and example the character of God. And his life was changed on the mountain by living with a perfect person, just as the life of an evil man can be changed if you put him amongst good men. But as time passed, the glory faded from Moses' face, just as cosmetics have to be washed off at the end of the day and the truth be revealed. So character that is acquired only by precept and example tends not to last. And that was why Moses wore the veil, so that the people would not see the character of God draining away from his face. But there is another kind of character that lasts forever. In fact, it lasts beyond death. In fact, it's the only thing that survives death. And it is Christian character. And the difference is that whereas cosmetic character works from the outside going inwards, Christian character starts on the inside and works outwards until it affects the person's entire life. Christian character working out from the inside will affect your morals, your ethical standards. It will change your habits, your hobbies, your pleasures, your loves, and even your appearance. Christian character, the character of Jesus Christ in a man's heart, working outwards, will affect your marriage, your friendships, your religion, your daily work, your entire life. And it will do that because it comes from a transformed heart, a changed heart, a new heart. Here it is in theological terms. The difference between cosmetic character and Christian character is the difference between reformation and regeneration. Reformation. A man can tidy up his own life under his own steam and in his own strength. He can decide to clean up his life and be a reformed man. We sometimes say of men who have clean themselves up a bit, he's a changed man, he's a reformed man, he's come to his senses and sorted himself out. That's reformation. And Jesus once told a parable about it. The man whose house was unclean because there was a demon in it. So he got out the brush and swept out the demon, and he was left with a nice, clean, empty house. And the devil loves empty houses. So back he came with 7 demons worse than himself. And Jesus said the last state of that man was worse than the first. He'd done it all in his own strength. He was just reformed. But to be regenerate is different. It's to be born again of the Spirit. That's what the word regenerate means. Having a new nature and a new heart. Becoming a new man rather than just a different man. You can be changed and reformed without being born again. Reformation is not the same as regeneration. Reformation starts on the outside and works in. Regeneration starts on the inside and works out. A new heart will I give you, and I will put a new spirit upon you. And the effects of that last for all time and for all eternity. In closing, will you turn to 2 Corinthians, the passage where Paul speaks about Moses and the fading glory. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 12. He's speaking of character that endures. Since we Christians, 2 Corinthians 3 and 12, since we Christians have such a hope, we are very bold, not like Moses, who put a veil over his face so that the Israelites might not see the end of the fading splendor, the character disappearing. Verse 17. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we Christians all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, and here's the character, the inside character, are being changed into his likeness from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. We sometimes sing in our hymn, changed from glory into glory. I used to think that that was what happened in heaven. Maybe it does, I don't know. Changed from glory into glory. Well, the glory of the thing is that it can happen to you now. You can be born again now. You can become regenerate rather than reformed now. Changed from glory into glory now, with the character of Christ on the inside, working outwards. So may it be, and may the Lord add his blessing to the preaching of his word. To his name be the honor and the praise. As we come to the Lord's Supper, 311 is the hymn, My God, and is thy table spread, and does thy cup with love o'erflow. Hymn number 311, and the tune is Wareham, number 607.